Everything triggers me, James. Well, not everything.
Our last podcast, or not our last podcast, two podcasts ago triggered you so badly that we're not releasing it, so we're re-recording it because you want to be a perfectionist. Catherine, well, I don't know how many times I have to explain this to you. I have studied the fine art of podcasting. And
have
what
you?
We're trying to, yes, what we're trying to do is have a successful podcast. And in my research, it is very clear, it is highly indicated that the less you know about a subject, the more successful you will be as a podcaster.
Oh, that's exactly the antithesis of what I've read.
Okay. I'm doing my own research, though, right?
Oh, your own research.
Do your own research, Catherine. Mm-hmm.
Okay. That and vaccinations.
My research has shown conclusively that Joe Rogan has no clue what he's talking about, and yet he's the number one podcaster. Well, he's not the number one. I don't know that he's the number one right now, but he has been. And he still has enough to get a $100 million deal from Spotify. That's all I want, Catherine. Is it too much to ask for to have a $100 million deal from Spotify?
Yeah, with this podcast, perhaps. We're like the 2,000th place after Joe Rogan. What?
You see, this is the problem. We know too much about what we're talking about. We need to find topics of which we know less so that we can be more successful.
Okay. Well, what can we know less about?
It's the Dunning-Kruger effect as it pertains to podcasts. Anyway, so we're going to re-record episode 49, which was...
about boredom.
Yeah. Seems like it's really boring, but it got me going.
It got you going in a way that, yeah, I'd not heard before.
So I have some triggers. I hate using that word, but I have some things that bother me, Catherine. And one of the things that bother me is bad science journalism. That's when a, quote, journalist does a really bad job of reporting on the science that they claim to be reporting on. And the reason that this bothers me so much is that I know people in my life who don't believe in science. And primarily when I talk to them, it sounds like they don't believe in science because they say, oh, well, you know, one decade they say this thing is true. And the next decade, another thing is true. Like, you know, 10 years ago they said, oh, red meat is really bad for you. And now they're saying, oh, well, red meat's not bad for you. It's actually really good for you. Or
I get that.
And I feel like that's coming directly from the bad journalism because the journalists don't interpret the studies properly. So they make these claims that they say are science-based, and they're really not because they don't understand the science that they're reporting on. And the article that we're going to be referencing today is one of those articles. And it's this is an easy one, though, because it's a really stupid article about a really stupid subject. So I thought it was kind of safe to talk about.
Is anything safe, James? Is anything safe?
This one is pretty low-hanging fruit. It's not like some big, major scientific thing that people's lives are relying on or reliant on.
Right.
Well, maybe it is. I don't know. I guess if you get bored to death. I could bore you to death. I guess
I think
we could
you just
try
did.
That.
I think you just did, but keep going.
Thanks, Catherine.
No, not kidding.
I really you've really inspired me to continue going. I've bored you to death from my talking, and now you want me to continue to talk.
Continue to talk.
You are an inspiring person.
You know
what you should be? You should be a life coach.
I would be so horrible at that.
You really make me feel like wanting to get out there and get it done.
Get it done. No, I would be a horrible life coach. Because...
or maybe more like lie down and die.
Anyway, I thought the article was interesting, and I took it as less of a scientific treatise and as more of like a fluff piece, I guess, like an Almost Famous.
I don't like treating science like a fluff piece.
Well, I thought this article was a fluff piece. And so it didn't trigger me.
I don't think he's writing like a fluff piece. I think he's trying to be a genuine science writer. Now, it may not be the most important science.
Yeah, he is a genuine science writer.
Says you. Allegedly.
No, it says like his credits.
His online profile?
Credits, yeah.
His Facebook profile?
No, I don't, I'm on Facebook. No, just say no. Well, let's just get into it.
Yeah. David Robson wrote the article for the BBC called... Why We Snap Judge Some People as Boring.
The article actually takes and commingles different scientists, different areas. And so there are actually three different people that they kind of commingle. It doesn't matter if we reference the scientists or not, because it was all part and parcel of the same thing. To me, it was.
So the writer here, Robson, is taking almost everything out of context, but some of it is way more out of context than others. So some of it's, you know, I think... this one particular scientist that I'm thinking about just does bad science. And by bad science, I mean that he's not really following the scientific method. The article, though, one of the things that really got my goat about it was that he says that research has shown boredom is one of the most excruciating emotions.
Right.
Which seems to me to be a little bit more over-the-top hyperbole than is warranted for a scientific journal.
Yeah, it was an excruciating emotion, he said, with surprisingly profound influence on our behavior.
I don't think that's a fair statement. I mean, in your own life, what are the emotions that have the highest impact on you?
Grief, anxiety, and feeling, how should I say it, like marginalized or feeling ignored. And I don't know if that's a feeling. Ignored isn't a feeling, but like
that's a good one, though.
You know, that feeling. And boredom, I think, would probably may make it into the top 10 or 12, maybe 15, if I were to really tease this out. Boredom, I think, for me personally, stings. It doesn't bring me to my knees. And what it does is it spurs me to immediately think of ways to not be bored, because I do find it an uncomfortable feeling to be bored. So I tend to default to trying to be more creative. Mm-hmm. And I think boredom has spurred creativity for me, because I'll just be like, I can't just sit here and dwell. And
yeah,
so
it seems
I'll
like it's a correctable emotion.
Yeah, to me it is, right. So I don't agree. Yeah.
Some of those other states, you know, if you're feeling marginalized, if you're feeling unseen, that's not something that you can necessarily correct yourself.
Right.
Mental anguish, watching someone else in pain, that's an excruciating emotion. That's not boredom. That's something that I can't really control, but I have to deal with.
Right.
I think this was a bad way to start the article. You know, to be so hyperbolic about it seems just, you know, don't start that way. Let's put it in real context. And what I remember the first time we did this, you made a really good point about this research that I want you to recall.
Well, that like they didn't really define boredom?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the basis of scientific investigation, is do the observation to actually observe something and simply define it.
Yes, there was not an operational definition, like is boredom a state of X over X period of time whereby you know, there wasn't a definition. I mean, we can just leave it at that. I'm going...
You're talking about a pretty deep definition, like a mathematical one. They didn't even do a light definition of it. So we don't even really know what we're talking about, to be honest.
Well, it's assumed that we all understand what boredom is, and assumptions really don't play big into scientific research. So
the point of the article is saying, you know, don't snap judge people that you think might be boring, because, you know, they're people too.
They are people too.
No, they're not. Boring people are definitely not people. If there's anyone that deserves to be marginalized, it's boring people. But who's really boring? I mean, that's the thing. If you're willing to dive deep into anybody's existence, it's unlikely that anybody's really that boring.
Well, according to the research, they asked like 115 people, right, in the U.S. to describe their boredom, to describe typical qualities of boredom.
No, not their boredom. They wanted to categorize different hobbies and professions and see which people thought would be boring.
Right. And I think one of your criticisms was it was self-reported. It really wasn't based in anything other than someone's thought process. Right.
They're just asking people what they think is boredom rather than trying to quantify it in some way.
Right. So what did you make of that?
Well, I thought it was stupid. And you know, I wonder who these 115 people are. And, you know, my guess would be that they're probably just graduate students, because most social psychology studies are done on graduate students, which is kind of a small and very strange little niche of the population. Mm-hmm. So psychiatrists or psychology professors studying psychology students.
Right.
And I don't know if I want to draw a lot of general conclusions for the general public from that group. Because aren't all psychologists crazy?
No.
Not all of them, but most of them.
No.
You sure? Don't you know a nice psychiatrist that might be a little crazy?
No.
You sure? Are you sure about that?
Well, I mean, I study psychology. I have an undergraduate degree in psychology.
Okay, well, you're a little crazy.
And I'm a little crazy. There, so let's just use me as the...
Yes.
As the norming group.
As the guinea pig.
As the norming group. Anyway, no, I found this interesting when they asked these people, you know, their self-reported data, which, you know, take it for what it is. They came up with like 45 personal characteristics, 28 occupational characteristics, and 19 hobbies. And then they asked an additional group of people, like 300 more people, to rate each one of these like that the original group, 115 people derived these categories. Then they asked additional 300 people to rate them on a scale of not boring at all to extremely boring.
It was all based on what the first scientist came up with, and he, you know, what he thought of as being boring. And these were just different.
Like, do you think he prompted them? Do you think he prompted them?
Well, didn't he? He wrote the categories.
I thought he just asked them, and then they derived it from their responses.
My main criticism here is he just makes a lot of assumptions and asks other people's opinions of his assumptions. Rather than doing observation and measuring things, he's basically just asking for people's assumptions.
Right.
Doesn't sound very sciencey to me.
That's why I thought it was a fluff piece. The obvious occupations to me, I guess the categories were like occupations, hobbies, or personal characteristics. It was like data entry workers, accountants, tax officers, and hobbies, you know, going to church, watching TV, and sleeping. I mean, do you have sleeping as a hobby? I thought that was just a physiological function.
It's not one that I would necessarily write down as a hobby, but I love sleeping.
Do you?
I think I'm good at it. I do it all the time. I do it as much as I can. So I think it really checks off most of the marks as being a hobby.
Really? See, and yeah. I avoid it at all costs.
In fact, I think I could. I'm so good at it. Maybe I could do it as an art performance.
Oh, you could do a performance piece at Next First Friday.
I could charge people to come in and watch me sleep.
Like that gal did in the gallery, and she just stood there.
Yeah, there are so many examples of this.
I know. The personal stuff that was boring was if the people were thought to be close-minded. Again, that's just taking on some personal. They're really, you know, narrow range of interest, lacking a sense of humor, and or if they were perceived as whiny.
Yeah, whiny isn't boring. It's just whiny. That's a whole different. That's one of the problems. If you don't have a definition of the thing you're studying, you tend to drift.
Mm-hmm. So what do you really make of this research, James?
I think the research that actually was looking at this was bad. And there was references to other research that the primary research does, which was badly placed. Like, for instance, they're trying to use a study of what happens to people when they're left alone in a room by themselves with no stimulus, i.e. they don't have their phone, they don't have a computer, they don't have a book, they don't have a magazine. But there is one thing in the room with them, and that is a little buzzer that will give them an electric shock. And less than half the people, and there were only 80 people in this study, but fewer than half of them chose to buzz themselves. And that original study that looked at that, which is a little bit sciencey because you're actually putting people and you're observing what happens.
Yes.
Didn't actually conclude anything about boredom. But it was later used in other studies to show what happens when you're bored. It's like, but the first study doesn't make a correlation between the activity and boredom. So you can't use that in other studies to make any observations about boredom.
That was under their premise that boredom was one of the most excruciating emotions. I think it was in 2014, there were 18 out of 42 participants who they said chose electric shock to break up their boredom experience.
All right, so I got the numbers wrong, but I got the proportions right.
No, yeah, 50-50. Well, I don't even know if it's the same study. There were a couple
that's the one I was talking about.
Right. And so that to me, you know, as we discussed before, it's like, are they kind of having a secondary premise that boredom will drive you to do, you know, crazy things, harming yourself? Is that the assumption?
That's the assumption they're making. But like I said, that original study that actually looked at the people, put the people in the room, and so what they did, that study doesn't say anything about boredom. They don't make that conclusion because they don't have the scientific data to make that conclusion or to make that causal link. But then Van Tilburg, comes in and makes a big case about it. Well, this is why boredom is so excruciating. People will literally shock themselves if they're bored. Well, again, that case was never made, scientifically speaking. You're just making an assumption. Which is bad. Science is not based on assumption. The science is the opposite of assumption because most of our assumptions about why the things happen in the world turn out to be false because we don't have enough data to make the proper assessment.
Right.
So assumptions in science are all well and good to start down a path, but you test your assumptions scientifically and then they're either determined to be good or bad. But if you're just asking other people, like once he had his grid of what other people told him was boring. He used that to create a hypothetical situation where he had hypothetically boring people versus hypothetically interesting people.
Right.
He asked his scientific study participants, so would you rather spend time with hypothetically boring people or hypothetically interesting people?
What were the characteristics? I mean, there was he actually named these people and gave them a vignette. I mean, he created vignettes.
It's all hypothetical. He's not even putting them in situations with hypothetically boring people or you know, with he's just asking them questions about hypothetically, what would you do? I mean, how would you answer that question? Well, of course you want to spend your hypothetical time with hypothetically interesting people.
Right.
It's a dead end.
Right. Well, he asked them, you know, how much if they would like each of these characters, how they would meet them or if they would avoid them, how much money they would actually spend to spend time with them. And actually, they said they spend three times as much money on the interesting person who was, interestingly enough, an artist.
Hypothetically speaking.
Hypothetical artist. They spend three times as much more to spend time with an artist than a boring person. Why do people think that artists are hypothetically interesting?
Because we are deeply interesting.
Are we?
Well, here's the thing. There's the stereotype that the artist is a tortured soul who feels a lot of emotions and has to go off by himself and make art to express his emotions.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether or not that's true, people like emotions. So you want to be near people who have emotions. And so, you know, who feels more deeply than the artist?
Wow.
And we're so in tune with ourselves that we also make great lovers. That's the other assumption people make. Now, that's not always true. You know, a lot of artists or a lot of successful artists are deep neurotics. And you don't probably want to be having sex with a neurotic. If all they can think about is themselves, you know, that's not going to be the best experience for you.
Right. Or germs or something. I mean,
germs. What are you talking about, germs?
Well, like, you know, intimate contact, germs, monkeypox. I mean, there's a whole array now that you could just get hung up on if you were neurotic and an artist and trying to be a lover.
You are so weird.
I know. Is that weird?
Do you want to spend time with Catherine? She's weird, man. Suddenly came out talking about monkeypox and sex and stuff. I don't know what she's... I have no part in this conversation. I'm moving on.
I know. We need to move on. What are the good parts?
Well, the most interesting thing that Van Tilburg says in his studies, that's nothing to do with science. It's just simple common wisdom. And he says, I actually like this. He says, bores talk a lot, but they have very little to say. You know, not science, but it sounds like simple wisdom to me.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it'd be great if he could prove that scientifically. Mm-hmm. If he actually went to parties and monitored parties and then identified what speech was considered boring and what speech wasn't and what percentage of this and that, blah, blah, blah. You know, you could actually do the science, but it would take a lot of work and I'm not sure it'd be worth it because we still kind of know what boring is and we don't need a scientific definition of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think. And he also says, you know, generally he gives advice to people who think they may be boring. He says,
yes,
you know, generally let the other person talk, listen to them. Which is good for two reasons, because people love to talk, so you're letting people do the things that they love to do. But also, if you're boring and you're not talking, you're not going to be boring people, because that's most of the way you affect your boringness is by talking about yourself. That's good advice. And he also, you know, but that's also really, really, really basic advice. If you're trying to get a girlfriend, just let her talk and nod empathetically while she's talking, while she's telling you about her day. And you want the super secret pro tip, Catherine?
What is that?
That works on men too.
Well, men like to just talk.
They like to be heard too.
Right. You get really good at that when you're dating, nodding appropriately.
Oh, right. You get good at that at dating if you get good at dating.
If you get good at dating, right.
If you're crappy at dating, that's not going to change. And if you never change that, you're going to be a bad dater.
Mm-hmm.
Says the guy who hasn't dated in 30 years.
Well, you're married though.
I mean, exactly. That's my point. Don't date.
I saw his tips to be, were you done with the tips? Am I not letting you talk? I'm boring.
No, please talk, Catherine. I love hearing you talk.
Okay, great.
About monkeypox and sex.
Monkeypox. Well, when he said like tips not to be boring, my only note was in parentheses, so lie? ? And it kind of cracked me up because the first one was reframe your job description. I think I chuckled because I have done that.
Well, it's not necessarily lying, though. I think the example...
Well, it kind of is.
Well, it doesn't have to be. The example could be if you're in data analysis, and this is, you know, data analysis may be considered a boring, so, you know, warning signs. But if you're doing data analysis within a scientific project, then you can just say, well, I'm in the sciences. Or you could say specifically what project you're working on, right? Rather than saying you do data analysis or data entry, for that matter. Same thing. It's not lying. It's just focusing on different part of the job description.
I guess reframing it just hit me wrong. Because did data analysis, and I guess I would be considered boring.
You could totally read that as as a lie, as right. saying just lie, or you know, I don't lie about what I do. I just reframe it. It's like no one's paid me to do industrial design for several years, but I still sometimes call myself an industrial designer. Is that lying?
No, because you were.
Yeah, but I use the present tense. Because I don't want to admit that I'm a podcaster. But and the other great tips.
That, is that a that job?
I don't know, Catherine. You tell me.
I guess let's call it a job. We're reframing it. We're reframing it.
Yeah. Once enough of our listeners buy our stickers and our t-shirts, then it becomes a job. I'm not sure at what point that is, but or we get a $100 million deal from Spotify.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
that's
going to happen.
You know what, Spotify? I'd be willing to settle for $50 million. Maybe I shouldn't be talking for both of us, Catherine. I think we should probably need to discuss what deal we'd be willing to take. But I'd be willing to split 50 with you. You know, 60-40.
60-40?
Well, you're the one making me redo the episode, so.
Well, based on making this podcast even better and more amenable to, like, you know.
Fine, we'll split it 60-60 then.
60-60 sounds good. That works.
That was a joke. I don't remember where I saw that from.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. But anyway, the good tips I took away from this article.
Yes, go ahead.
That Van Tilburg gave out. Well, no. The remarkably good tips for being left alone at a party. So I now, if I go to the next party I go to, which is actually going to be tomorrow.
Oh, no.
I will just tell people I'm an accountant and my favorite hobbies are watching TV and sleeping. People will leave me alone and I can sit in a corner and think about art.
Creating art in your head, as it were.
Yeah, no one wants to see it anyway, so I might as well just leave it in my head. It's cheaper that way.
I don't even want to see my work at this point.
What?
I'm struggling.
You say that, but then you always make stuff.
Yeah. So he says study the art of conversation. Have we studied that?
I don't even know what that means, really.
I don't either. That's why I'm asking. Open up about your private life. Do you open up about your private life?
Hell no. What do you think? I'm a crazy person?
I know. I mean, a crazy person.
Maybe if I made it up.
Why
am
I a crazy person?
People don't want to hear about my life. This is everything everything we say on this podcast is a lie. My name isn't even James.
We're not even podcasters.
We're not even recording this.
We're not even recording this, right.
Don't repeat me.
I'm studying the art of conversation. They said to repeat things to like give, you know, credence to that you're listening.
Well, that was a bad tip because it just really annoyed me.
Okay. Oh my God. Well, what makeup life would you give them? I see, I wouldn't identify as a nurse. I don't want to talk to people about their idiosyncratic like health issues. I would tell people that I was, you know, a dog walker. I'd actually said once that I was an artist. One time I told them.
Well, you are kind of an artist, but honestly, I'm getting really bored by this conversation.
Are you?
I am, since it's the second time we've done it.
Now I just started getting into it.
Oh, God. Well, finish your thought so we can finish.
Okay. I think I'm done. Okay. Bye. What do I do? I'm turning this off.